My name is Corvin Thex, and everyone in this Emperor Forsaken hive knows I'm nothing but gutter trash. The workers spat when they saw me coming down the hab block corridors. The overseers would curse my name when they discovered another shipment had come up short. Even the servitors seemed to malfunction more often when I was around, as if my very presence offended their machine spirits. I had earned every bit of their hatred through years of careful thievery. While my neighbors broke their backs in the manufactorums for 14 hours a day, I made my living skimming from administratum supply shipments and picking the locks of worker dormitories when their occupants were on shift. The irony wasn't lost on me that I survived by stealing from people who barely had enough to survive themselves, but desperation makes monsters of us all down here in the lower levels of Hive Tertius. The sound of heavy boots echoed through the ventilation shafts above my head. Arbides patrol, most likely following up on reports of missing ration packs from the latest food distribution. I had been careful to take only small amounts from each shipment, but the Adeptus Arbides had ways of tracking patterns that escaped most criminals. Their forensic auspex scanners could detect trace amounts of specific materials on clothing and skin, and I knew my hands probably still carried residue from the sacred oils I had stolen from the shrine two levels up. That particular theft still made my stomach churn with a mixture of fear and desperate satisfaction. The shrine of Saint Celestine's Mercy had been poorly guarded, with only an ancient servitor watching over the donation boxes during the night cycle. The faithful left whatever meager coins they could spare, hoping their offerings might earn them the Emperor's protection in the dangerous depths of the hive. I had waited until the servitor's patrol cycle brought it to the far end of the shrine chamber before prying open the collection boxes with a bent piece of rebar. The coins had been few, but among them I found something far more valuable, a small vial of blessed oil that some desperate soul had donated, probably hoping it would cure a loved one's sickness. Such items fetched high prices from the black market dealers who operated in the deepest parts of the Underhive, where faith and superstition blended into profitable commodities. The theft had marked me as a heretic in the eyes of anyone who discovered it, but hunger had a way of overriding religious concerns. My current hiding spot in the maintenance tunnels offered temporary safety, but I knew it wouldn't last long. The Crimson Jackals gang controlled this section of level 47, and their territory markers were carved deep into every wall and support beam. I had made the mistake of stealing from one of their courier runs 3 days ago, taking a package that I assumed contained narcotics or weapons. Instead, it had held data slates containing gang financial records, information that would have been worthless to me but apparently vital to their operations. The gang's response had been swift and brutal. They had already caught two other thieves who operated in their territory, and the screams that echoed through the ventilation systems for hours afterward served as a clear warning to anyone else considering similar crimes. The Crimson Jackals didn't just kill thieves, they made examples of them, using rusty blades and improvised torture devices to ensure the victim's suffering lasted as long as possible. I shifted my position carefully, trying to avoid the sharp edges of broken metal that jutted from the tunnel walls. The maintenance passages were never meant for human habitation, built only to allow tech adepts access to the hive's vital systems. Decades of neglect had left them in a state of dangerous decay, with exposed power cables sparking intermittently and pools of toxic runoff collecting in the lower sections. The air itself was barely breathable, thick with chemical vapors that made my eyes water and my throat burn. Despite the danger, these tunnels offered advantages that the main hab levels couldn't provide. The Arbides rarely patrolled here, considering the passages too unstable for regular use. The gangs avoided them as well, preferring to conduct their business in areas where they could maintain proper territorial control. For someone like me, hunted by both law enforcement and criminals, the maintenance tunnels represented a temporary sanctuary where I could plan my next move. My stomach cramped with hunger, reminding me that I hadn't eaten in nearly 2 days. The stolen coins from the shrine had bought me a single meal of processed protein paste, but that had been consumed yesterday. I needed to find another source of income quickly, before desperation drove me to make careless mistakes that would get me caught or killed. The sound of footsteps in the tunnel ahead made me freeze. Someone else was moving through the maintenance passages, their movements careful and deliberate, I pressed myself deeper into the shadows, hoping whoever it was would pass by without noticing my presence. The footsteps grew closer, accompanied by the soft scraping of metal against stone. After several tense minutes, the sounds faded into the distance. I waited another quarter hour before moving, following the tunnel system deeper into the hive's forgotten depths. The passages here were older than those on the upper levels, built during the hive's original construction millennia ago. The walls showed signs of different architectural styles, suggesting they had been modified and expanded many times over the centuries. It was in one of these ancient sections that I discovered something that changed everything. The tunnel opened into a wider chamber, its ceiling lost in darkness above. Along one wall, I could make out the faint outline of a massive door, its surface covered in dust and corrosion, but still intact. As I moved closer, my stolen lumen pack revealed details that made my heart race with possibility. The door bore the Imperial Aquila, its twin-headed eagle carved deep into the metal surface. But this wasn't the crude approximation found on modern imperial architecture. The craftsmanship was extraordinary, with each feather rendered in perfect detail and the eagle's eyes set with what appeared to be genuine gems. The doorframe was similarly elaborate, covered in Gothic script that I couldn't read but recognized as High Gothic, the sacred language of the Imperium's elite. More importantly, the chamber around the door showed no signs of recent disturbance. No gang tags, no Arbites investigation markers, no evidence that anyone had been here in decades or possibly centuries. The thick layer of dust on the floor was unmarked except for my own footprints, and the air carried the musty scent of long abandonment. I ran my hands along the door's surface, feeling for any obvious opening mechanism. The metal was cold and smooth beneath my fingers, unmarked by the corrosion that plagued most of the hive's infrastructure. Whatever lay behind this door had been built to last, constructed with materials and techniques that far exceeded anything used in the current age. The implications were staggering. Archaeotech from the Dark Age of Technology could be worth more than everything I had stolen in my entire career combined. Even lesser imperial artifacts from the hive's early history would fetch enormous sums from the right buyers. The door itself, with its perfect Aquila and High Gothic inscriptions, might be valuable enough to buy my way off this world entirely. But first, I had to find a way inside. The door showed no obvious handles, locks, or control mechanisms. I searched the surrounding walls for hidden switches or panels, but found nothing except more Gothic script and decorative elements. Whatever security system protected this chamber, it was either incredibly well hidden or required knowledge that I didn't possess. The sound of distant explosions echoed through the tunnels, reminding me that the hive never truly slept. Gang warfare, industrial accidents, or Arbites raids could happen at any moment, and I couldn't afford to spend too much time in one location, but this discovery was too important to abandon. If I could find a way past this door, it might solve all my problems at once. I began a more systematic examination of the chamber, looking for any clue that might reveal the door's opening mechanism. The walls were covered in religious imagery mixed with imperial symbols, suggesting this had once been some kind of sacred space. Perhaps a private chapel for high-ranking officials, or a storage area for valuable religious artifacts. The floor beneath my feet was made of the same high-quality metal as the door, its surface worn smooth by age but still solid. I could feel slight variations in texture as I walked, suggesting there might be hidden mechanisms built into the flooring itself. My fingers traced the edges of what might have been concealed panels, but I couldn't find any way to activate them. Hours passed as I continued my search, growing increasingly frustrated with each failed attempt. The chamber seemed to mock me with its secrets, offering the promise of unimaginable wealth while keeping it just out of reach. My situation was becoming more desperate by the hour, and I knew I couldn't hide in these tunnels forever. My frustration finally overcame my caution. After hours of fruitless searching, I decided to try the most direct approach available to someone of my particular skill set. I pulled out the lockpicks and prying tools I always carried, examining the door's edges for any weakness I could exploit. The ancient metal showed no obvious seams or joints, but years of breaking into supposedly secure locations had taught me that every barrier had its vulnerabilities. The door's lower edge revealed a hairline crack where it met the floor, barely visible, even with my lumen pack held close to the surface. I worked the thinnest of my picks into the gap, feeling for any internal mechanism that might respond to pressure. The metal was harder than anything I had encountered before, and my tools scraped against it without leaving so much as a scratch. After nearly an hour of careful probing, something finally gave way. A section of the floor near the door's base shifted slightly under pressure, revealing a hidden panel that had been perfectly flush with the surrounding surface. The panel was roughly the size of my palm, covered in the same high Gothic script that decorated the rest of the chamber. At its center sat a small depression, clearly designed to accept some kind of key or activating device. I stared at the depression, trying to determine what might fit. The shape was irregular, with curved edges and small protrusions that suggested it had been designed for a specific object. Without the proper key, I would need to find another way to activate whatever mechanism lay beneath the panel. My collection of stolen goods included several small imperial trinkets that I had taken from various shrines and private collections over the years. Most were worthless religious tokens, but a few showed signs of genuine craftsmanship that suggested they might have served more practical purposes. I began testing each item against the depression, hoping to find something that matched its unique contours. The third item I tried was a small pendant I had stolen from a mid-level administrator's personal quarters several months earlier. The pendant was made of the same dark metal as the door, shaped like a stylized skull with tiny gems set in its eye sockets. As I pressed it into the depression, I felt it click into place with a satisfying mechanical precision that sent vibrations through the floor beneath my feet. The door responded immediately. Ancient mechanisms groaned to life within the walls, and the massive portal began to swing inward with surprising smoothness. The air that flowed out carried scents of old incense and decay, mixed with something else that I couldn't immediately identify. My lumen pack revealed a chamber beyond that stretched far into the darkness, its dimensions hidden by the limits of my light source. I stepped through the doorway and found myself in what had clearly once been a place of worship. The chamber was enormous, its vaulted ceiling supported by massive columns carved with religious imagery. Rows of wooden pews filled the central space, their surfaces blackened with age and covered in a thick layer of dust that muffled my footsteps. At the far end of the hall, I could make out the silhouette of an altar, its details lost in the shadows beyond my light's reach. This was an Adeptus Ministorum prayer hall, one of the sacred spaces where the faithful had once gathered to worship the Emperor during the Hive's early construction. The architecture was far grander than anything found in the current levels of Hive Tertius, built during an age when resources were more plentiful and craftsmanship was valued over mere functionality. Every surface bore elaborate decorations, from the carved saints that watched over the pews to the intricate mosaics that covered the walls. But time and neglect had taken their toll on the sacred space. Many of the pews were rotting, their wood softened by centuries of moisture and decay. The mosaics were cracked and faded, their once brilliant colors reduced to dull shadows of their former glory. Worse still, someone had deliberately defaced many of the religious images, scratching out the faces of saints and carving crude symbols over the imperial aquilas. The desecration filled me with a mixture of unease and opportunity. Whoever had vandalized this place had clearly been here long after its abandonment, but the thick dust and undisturbed air suggested they hadn't returned in decades. More importantly, the defacement might have been done by scavengers who had missed valuable items in their haste to destroy imperial symbols. I began a systematic search of the prayer hall, starting with the pews closest to the entrance. Most contained nothing but dust and the occasional fragment of rotted fabric from long decayed prayer books or cushions. The few items I found were corroded beyond any practical value, tarnished metal clasps from destroyed texts, bent coins that had fallen between the seat cushions, and small devotional trinkets that had been deliberately broken by the vandals. The walls yielded more promising results. Several of the carved saints had been fitted with small alcoves designed to hold votive candles or offerings, and many of these spaces still contained items that the defacers had overlooked. I found a collection of ceremonial candles made from genuine wax rather than the synthetic substitutes used in modern shrines, their surfaces covered in protective wax seals that had preserved them in perfect condition. More valuable were the small metal plaques that had been mounted beneath some of the saint carvings. These were made of precious metals and bore inscriptions in High Gothic that identified the saints and described their martyrdoms. The craftsmanship was exquisite, with each letter perfectly formed and the metal surfaces polished to a mirror finish despite their age. Collectors of imperial antiquities would pay substantial sums for such items, especially ones that came from the early period of Hive construction. As I worked my way deeper into the hall, the signs of deliberate vandalism became more extensive. Entire sections of wall mosaics had been chiseled away, leaving rough patches of exposed stone. The faces of carved angels had been systematically destroyed, their features obliterated by careful hammer blows. Someone had spent considerable time and effort in defacing this sacred space, driven by a hatred of imperial religion that went far beyond simple theft. The altar at the far end of the hall had received the worst treatment. The massive stone structure had been partially demolished, its carved surfaces scarred by chisel marks and acid burns. The golden aquila that had once crowned the altar lay in pieces on the floor, its metal surface blackened and twisted by intense heat. Sacred texts had been torn apart and scattered, their pages reduced to fragments that crunched under my boots as I approached. But even here, the vandals had missed valuable items. Behind the ruined altar, I discovered a small chamber that had once served as a sacristy for the hall's priests. The room's entrance had been partially concealed by fallen debris, which explained why it had escaped the attention of the defacers. Inside, I found a collection of ceremonial items that had been carefully stored in protective cases. Most of the items were religious in nature: chalices made of precious metals, incense burners decorated with imperial symbols, and vestments woven from fabrics that felt impossibly soft despite their age. But mixed among these obvious treasures were objects that seemed out of place in a religious setting. Strange devices made of unfamiliar materials, their purposes unclear, but their construction suggesting they were far older than the prayer hall itself. The most intriguing item was a small reliquary made of polished obsidian, its surface so dark it seemed to absorb the light from my lumen pack. The reliquary was roughly the size of my fist, carved into the shape of a human skull with eye sockets that held tiny gems of deep red. Unlike the other items in the sacristy, this one showed no signs of age or wear. Its surface was perfectly smooth, unmarked by the dust that covered everything else in the chamber. As I reached out to pick up the reliquary, something strange happened. The moment my fingers made contact with its surface, I heard what sounded like whispers emanating from within the obsidian skull. The sounds were too faint to make out individual words, but they carried an urgency that made my skin crawl. I jerked my hand back instinctively, but the whispers continued for several more seconds before fading into silence. Despite my unease, the reliquary was clearly the most valuable item I had found. Its construction was flawless, and the materials alone would be worth a fortune to the right buyer. I wrapped it carefully in a piece of cloth torn from one of the ruined vestments and placed it in my pack, along with the other treasures I had collected. The whispers didn't return, but I could swear I felt a faint warmth radiating from the wrapped object. The rest of my search yielded diminishing returns. The vandals had been thorough in their destruction of anything obviously valuable, and what remained was mostly corroded metal and rotted organic materials. I collected what I could, focusing on items small enough to carry easily and distinctive enough to attract serious buyers. By the time I finished, my pack was heavy with the weight of centuries-old treasures. The return journey through the maintenance tunnels felt different somehow. The familiar sounds of the hive seemed muffled and distant, as if I were hearing them through layers of thick fabric. My own footsteps echoed strangely in the narrow passages, creating phantom sounds that made me constantly look over my shoulder. The weight of the reliquary in my pack seemed to shift and move independently of my movements, though I knew this had to be my imagination. I made it back to my usual hiding spot in the lower levels without encountering any patrols or gang members, but sleep proved elusive. Every time I closed my eyes, vivid images flashed through my mind with startling clarity. I saw massive cathedrals burning under alien skies, their spires collapsing in showers of sparks and molten stone. Choirs of robed figures sang hymns of praise that slowly transformed into screams of agony as flames consumed their flesh. The dreams were more than simple nightmares. They felt like memories, as if I were witnessing events that had actually occurred somewhere in the galaxy's dark history. I could feel the heat of the burning cathedrals on my skin, smell the acrid smoke that poured from their ruined windows. The screaming choir seemed to be calling out to me specifically, their voices forming words in languages I didn't recognize but somehow understood. When I finally managed to fall into a fitful sleep, the dreams intensified. I found myself walking through the ruins of the burning cathedrals, stepping over the charred remains of the faithful who had died in the flames. The reliquary in my pack grew heavier with each step, its whispers becoming more insistent and urgent. I tried to remove it from my pack, but my hands wouldn't obey my commands. Instead, I found myself walking deeper into the ruined cathedral, drawn by voices that promised revelation and damnation in equal measure. I woke with a start, my body covered in cold sweat and my heart racing. The hiding spot around me looked exactly as it had when I fell asleep, but something felt fundamentally different. The air seemed thicker, charged with an energy that made my skin tingle. The familiar sounds of the hive had taken on new qualities, as if they were being filtered through some invisible barrier that changed their fundamental nature. Over the following days, these sensations intensified. The dreams came every time I tried to sleep, growing more vivid and disturbing with each occurrence. During my waking hours, I began to notice changes in the behavior of other underhivers that filled me with growing paranoia. People who had previously ignored my existence now watched me with hollow, empty eyes that seemed to track my movements with unnatural precision. The changes were subtle at first. A scavenger who normally avoided eye contact would stare at me intently as I passed, their gaze following me until I disappeared around a corner. Workers who had previously cursed my presence now fell silent when I approached, their conversation stopping abruptly as if controlled by some external force. Even the feral children who lived in the deepest parts of the underhive began to gather in small groups whenever I was nearby, their whispered conversations too quiet for me to overhear. But it was what happened when I thought they couldn't hear me that truly terrified me. On several occasions, I managed to position myself where I could observe these groups without being seen, and what I witnessed defied rational explanation. The hollow-eyed watchers would speak in perfect unison, their voices blending into a single sound that carried words in languages I didn't recognize. Their movements became synchronized as well, with entire groups turning their heads or shifting their positions at exactly the same moment. The reliquary seemed to be at the center of these strange occurrences. Whenever the synchronized behavior was most pronounced, I could feel the obsidian skull growing warm in my pack, its whispers becoming just barely audible even through the cloth wrapping. The connection was undeniable, but I couldn't bring myself to abandon the most valuable item I had ever stolen. The potential profits from selling it could change my entire life, lifting me out of the underhive and into an existence where I wouldn't have to steal to survive. The changes in the underhiver's behavior grew more pronounced over the following weeks. What had started as occasional staring and synchronized movements evolved into something far more disturbing. I began to notice that wherever I went, small groups would gather in the shadows, their hollow eyes tracking my movements with an intensity that made my skin crawl. They never approached directly, but their presence was constant, like scavengers waiting for carrion to finish dying. The reliquary's influence seemed to radiate outward from my hiding spot, affecting everyone within an expanding radius. Workers who had previously spat curses at me now bowed their heads respectfully when I passed, their lips moving in silent prayers that I couldn't quite hear. The feral children who lived in the deepest tunnels began leaving small offerings outside my shelter, scraps of food, bent pieces of metal shaped into crude symbols, and sometimes flowers that couldn't possibly grow in the underhive's toxic environment. I tried to convince myself that these were coincidences, that my paranoia was creating patterns where none existed. But the evidence became impossible to ignore when I discovered what they were doing to themselves. The hollow-eyed watchers had begun carving symbols into their flesh, using broken glass and rusted metal to etch intricate patterns across their arms, faces, and torsos. The wounds were precise and deliberate, forming designs that hurt to look at directly, as if they contained geometries that my mind couldn't properly process. The symbols matched nothing I had ever seen in imperial iconography. They twisted and curved in ways that seemed to shift when I wasn't looking directly at them, creating optical illusions that left me dizzy and nauseous. Worse still, the people who carved these marks into themselves showed no signs of pain or infection. Their wounds remained fresh and bleeding, but they moved normally, worked their shifts, and went about their daily routines as if nothing had changed. During one particularly restless night, I decided to follow a group of the marked ones to see where they went after their shifts ended. I had noticed that many of them disappeared into sections of the underhive that were normally avoided due to structural instability or toxic gas leaks. My curiosity overcame my better judgment, and I tracked them through maintenance passages and abandoned hab blocks to a section of level 52 that had been sealed off decades ago. The area they gathered in had once been a small shrine dedicated to Saint Drusus, one of the minor saints whose feast day was celebrated in the upper levels of the hive. The shrine itself was little more than a carved alcove in the wall, but the space around it had been transformed into something that made my stomach turn. The marked ones had arranged themselves in concentric circles around the shrine, their bodies positioned to mirror the twisted symbols they had carved into their flesh. They moved in perfect synchronization, their actions coordinated by some invisible signal that I couldn't detect. When one raised their arm skyward, all the others followed the exact same motion at precisely the same moment. When they began to sway back and forth, the entire group moved as if controlled by a single mind. The effect was hypnotic and deeply unsettling, like watching a single organism that had been divided into multiple bodies. As I watched from my hiding spot behind a collapsed support beam, they began to mutilate themselves in new ways. Using the same broken glass and rusted metal they had used to carve the symbols, they opened fresh wounds in their skin, allowing blood to flow freely onto the shrine floor. The blood didn't pool randomly as it should have. Instead, it flowed in specific patterns, forming larger versions of the twisted symbols that covered their bodies. The sight should have horrified me, but instead I felt a strange fascination that kept me rooted in place. There was something beautiful about their coordinated movements, something almost musical in the way they synchronized their actions. Part of my mind recognized this as deeply wrong, but a growing portion found their ritual compelling in ways I couldn't explain. That was when I realized they were repeating words I had spoken earlier that day. A scavenger had tried to shortchange me during a trade, and I had told him that thieves who couldn't count deserved whatever happened to them. Now, as I watched the marked ones perform their bloody ritual, they mouthed those exact words in perfect unison, their lips forming the syllables with reverent precision. The realization hit me like a physical blow. They weren't just watching me, they were treating my casual statements as sacred pronouncements. Every offhand comment, every muttered curse, every expression of frustration was being preserved and repeated by this growing congregation of the damned. I had become their unwitting prophet, and they were building a twisted religion around my most mundane utterances. I tried to leave quietly, but my movement caught their attention. As one, the entire group turned to look directly at my hiding spot, their hollow eyes reflecting the dim light like those of nocturnal predators. They didn't approach or threaten me, but their synchronized stare was more terrifying than any direct confrontation. I could feel their devotion radiating toward me like heat from a forge, burning with an intensity that made my skin feel tight and uncomfortable. The walk back to my shelter felt endless. Every shadow seemed to contain watching eyes, every sound echoed with whispered repetitions of words I had spoken weeks ago. The reliquary in my pack had grown noticeably warmer, its obsidian surface radiating heat that I could feel through the cloth wrapping. The whispers emanating from within had become more frequent and more distinct, though I still couldn't make out individual words. Over the following days, I made several attempts to dispose of the cursed artifact. I tried leaving it in abandoned sections of the maintenance tunnels, hoping that distance would break whatever connection existed between the reliquary and the growing congregation. But no matter where I left it, I would wake the next morning to find it back in my pack, nestled among my other possessions as if it had never been moved. I attempted to destroy it using tools stolen from a maintenance depot, but the obsidian proved impossibly hard. Hammers bounced off its surface without leaving so much as a scratch, and even industrial cutting tools designed to slice through hive infrastructure had no effect. The reliquary seemed to exist outside the normal laws of physics, immune to any damage I could inflict with conventional means. The congregation continued to grow, drawing new members from across the underhive's population. Workers, scavengers, even some of the gang members who controlled various territories began showing the telltale hollow eyes and carved symbols. They came from different levels, different backgrounds, different allegiances, but they all shared the same disturbing devotion to my unintentional prophecies. Their behavior became increasingly elaborate and ritualistic. They began constructing crude altars in hidden locations throughout the Underhive, using scavenged materials to create twisted parodies of imperial shrines. Instead of the Emperor's image, these altars featured crude representations of me, carved from scrap metal and decorated with offerings of stolen goods. The resemblance was unmistakable, despite the primitive craftsmanship. The offerings themselves were disturbing in their specificity. They brought items I had mentioned wanting, foods I had complained about lacking, even tools I had broken or lost during various thefts. Somehow they had been listening to every word I spoke, cataloging my needs and desires with obsessive attention to detail. The fact that they could acquire these items suggested their influence was spreading beyond the Underhive's lowest levels. My attempts to avoid them proved futile. No matter which routes I took through the maintenance tunnels, no matter how carefully I planned my movements, I would inevitably encounter groups of the Marked Ones performing their synchronized rituals. They never interfered with my activities directly, but their presence was constant and increasingly oppressive. I felt like a prisoner in my own territory, watched and worshipped by followers I had never wanted. The situation reached a breaking point when reports of the congregation's activities reached the upper levels of the Hive. An Adeptus Ministorum priest named Valdris Kine arrived to investigate the rumors of heretical worship in the Underhive, accompanied by a small retinue of armed Templars. I learned of his presence through overheard conversations among the Marked Ones, who spoke of the priest's arrival with a mixture of fear and anticipation that chilled my blood. Kine was everything I expected from an Adeptus Ministorum investigator, tall, gaunt, and radiating the kind of righteous authority that made even hardened criminals step aside. His skull was shaved and covered in devotional tattoos, and his black robes bore the silver aquila of his order. The Templars who accompanied him were equally imposing, their carapace armor polished to a mirror finish, and their weapons blessed with sacred oils. The priest began his investigation in the traditional manner, interviewing locals about the reported heretical activities and searching for physical evidence of corruption. His methods were thorough and systematic, the kind of professional competence that had kept the Adeptus Ministorum in power for millennia. Under normal circumstances, he would have quickly identified the source of the problem and eliminated it with brutal efficiency. But these weren't normal circumstances. The congregation had been watching and preparing for his arrival, their hollow eyes tracking his movements through the Underhive with the same obsessive attention they paid to mine. They knew his patrol routes, his interview schedule, even the locations where he planned to conduct his searches. More disturbing still, they began incorporating his presence into their twisted theology, treating his investigation as a test of their faith. The trap they set for him was as elaborate as it was horrifying. They lured him and his Templars to the abandoned shrine where I had first witnessed their ritual, using carefully planted evidence to suggest it was the center of the heretical activity. The priest took the bait, approaching the shrine with the confidence of someone who had faced similar threats countless times before. I watched the ambush from the same hiding spot I had used weeks earlier, unable to look away despite knowing what was about to happen. The congregation emerged from concealment with perfect coordination, surrounding the priest and his guards in a matter of seconds. But they didn't attack with weapons or try to overwhelm them through sheer numbers. Instead, they began their synchronized ritual, moving in patterns that seemed to confuse and disorient the imperial forces. The Templars tried to respond with their usual tactics, raising their weapons and forming a defensive perimeter around their priest. But something about the congregation's movements disrupted their coordination, making them stumble and lose their footing at crucial moments. Their blessed weapons seemed to malfunction, power cells draining unexpectedly and targeting systems failing without apparent cause. Kine himself proved more resistant to whatever influence the congregation was exerting, his faith and training providing some protection against their unnatural abilities. He began reciting prayers of banishment and protection, his voice cutting through the air with practiced authority. For a moment, it seemed as if his spiritual defenses might hold, that his connection to the Emperor might prove stronger than whatever force controlled the Marked Ones. But then they began to speak, and everything changed. The congregation recited my words in perfect unison, transforming casual complaints and offhand observations into what sounded like sacred litanies. They spoke of the hypocrisy of the upper levels, of the way the faithful were abandoned to suffer while their betters lived in comfort. They quoted my cynical observations about imperial justice and my bitter comments about the Emperor's supposed protection. The worst part was that my words, filtered through their devotion and transformed by their ritual, actually made sense. They painted a picture of a galaxy where faith was rewarded with suffering, where loyalty led only to exploitation, where the promises of salvation were nothing but lies told to keep the masses compliant. Hearing my own thoughts reflected back at me through their synchronized voices was like looking into a mirror that showed only the darkest aspects of my soul. Kine's prayers faltered as he listened to their recitations. I could see doubt creeping into his eyes, his absolute faith beginning to crack under the weight of uncomfortable truths. The congregation sensed his weakness and pressed their advantage, surrounding him more closely and intensifying their ritual. Their carved symbols began to glow with a faint, sickly light that cast twisted shadows across the shrine walls. The Templars fell first, their minds overwhelmed by the congregation's influence. One by one, they lowered their weapons and joined the synchronized movements, their blessed armor becoming just another element in the ritual's complex choreography. Their faces took on the same hollow expression as the original Marked Ones, their individuality subsumed into the collective consciousness that controlled the growing congregation. Kine lasted longer, his training and faith providing more resistance than his guards had possessed. But even he couldn't withstand the combined assault of the congregation's unnatural abilities and the uncomfortable truth contained in my recited words. His prayers became confused and contradictory, his movements jerky and uncertain. The silver aquila on his robes began to tarnish and blacken, as if the very symbols of his faith were being corrupted by proximity to the twisted ritual. When he finally broke, it was with a scream that echoed through the abandoned sections of the underhive for what felt like hours. The sound contained more than just physical agony. It was the cry of someone whose fundamental beliefs had been shattered, whose certainty about the nature of reality had been stripped away and replaced with something far more terrible. The congregation absorbed his scream into their ritual, weaving it into their synchronized movements like a musical note that completed a long-awaited chord. The priest's death was not quick or clean. The congregation took their time, using their carved symbols and synchronized movements to slowly drain away his life force while chanting my words like sacred hymns. They treated his suffering as a sacrament, a holy offering made in my name to whatever dark power had begun to manifest through the reliquary's influence. I wanted to run, to flee from the horror I was witnessing, but my body refused to obey. Some part of me was fascinated by the spectacle, drawn to the power that was being exercised in my name. The reliquary had grown so hot that I could feel it burning through my pack, its whispers now loud enough to hear clearly. They spoke of dominion and worship, of the sweet corruption that came from being elevated above one's natural station. As Kine's life finally faded, the congregation turned toward my hiding place with their hollow, synchronized stare. They had known I was there all along, had performed their ritual for my benefit as much as their own twisted satisfaction. In their eyes, I could see reflected not just devotion, but expectation. They were waiting for my approval, my blessing on the atrocity they had committed in my name. The weight of their attention was crushing, but beneath the horror and revulsion, I felt something else stirring. A dark satisfaction at seeing the arrogant priest brought low, at watching the representatives of imperial authority reduced to nothing more than sacrificial offerings. The congregation had acted out fantasies I had never dared voice, had taken revenge on the system that had kept me trapped in the underhive's depths for my entire life. The sight of Kine's broken body cooling on the shrine floor should have filled me with horror, but instead I felt a terrible satisfaction coursing through my veins. The priest who had come to cleanse the underhive of heresy now lay twisted among his own Templars, their blessed armor dulled and their weapons scattered like discarded toys. The congregation remained motionless around the corpses, their hollow eyes fixed on my hiding spot with an expectation that made my skin crawl. I tried to step back deeper into the shadows, but my legs wouldn't obey. The reliquary had grown so hot against my back that I could smell the cloth wrapping beginning to smolder, yet I couldn't bring myself to remove it. The whispers emanating from the obsidian skull had become a constant murmur that seemed to bypass my ears entirely, speaking directly into the deepest parts of my mind with words that promised power beyond imagination. The congregation began to disperse, moving with their characteristic synchronization as they carried away pieces of the dead Templars. They took fingers, strips of flesh, fragments of blessed armor, each piece claimed with reverent care, as if they were collecting holy relics rather than trophies from murdered servants of the Emperor. I watched them work with growing unease, understanding that these grisly souvenirs would become components in new rituals performed in my unwitting honor. Over the following days, I discovered that Kine's death had only accelerated the corruption spreading through the Underhive. Word of the priest's fate traveled through the lower levels with supernatural speed, carried by the hollow-eyed marked ones who seemed to appear wherever people gathered to discuss the incident. Their version of events painted me as a prophet of liberation, someone who had finally given voice to the anger and resentment that festered in every Underhiver's heart. The congregation swelled with new converts drawn from every level of Hive society. Workers who had never shown interest in anything beyond their daily shifts began carving the twisted symbols into their flesh with the same methodical precision as the original marked ones. Scavengers abandoned their territorial disputes to gather in abandoned sections where they could perform synchronized rituals. Even some of the gang enforcers who controlled the Underhive's black markets started displaying the telltale hollow stare that marked them as part of the growing collective. I tried to flee to the deepest parts of the maintenance tunnels, hoping that distance might weaken whatever connection bound me to the congregation. But the reliquary's influence had spread far beyond the range of any physical escape. No matter where I went, I found evidence of their presence. Crude altars built from scavenged materials, offerings of food and stolen goods arranged in patterns that hurt to look at directly, and always the watching eyes that tracked my movements with devoted intensity. The worst part was discovering how they had been spreading my influence. The Marked Ones had begun recording everything I said, using stolen data slates and improvised recording devices to capture even my most casual utterances. These recordings were then distributed throughout their network, played back during rituals where hundreds of voices would repeat my words in perfect unison. My complaints about the cold became prayers for warmth. My curses directed at rival thieves became litanies of judgment. My bitter observations about imperial hypocrisy became the foundation of a twisted theology that grew more elaborate with each passing day. I found one of their recording sites in an abandoned hab block on level 49, where dozens of the marked ones had gathered around a collection of jury-rigged audio equipment. The devices were crude but effective, cobbled together from components stolen from across the Hive's infrastructure. They had been recording continuously for weeks, capturing not just my voice but the ambient sounds of wherever I went. The playback filled the hab block with an eerie echo of my own existence, every footstep and muttered curse preserved for their devotional purposes. The congregation had also begun documenting my movements with obsessive detail, creating maps that showed every route I had taken through the Underhive over the past months. They marked locations where I had made significant thefts, places where I had hidden from patrols, even spots where I had simply paused to rest. These maps were treated like sacred texts, studied by groups of the marked ones who traced my paths with their fingers while reciting the words I had spoken at each location. My attempts to destroy their documentation proved futile. Every recording device I smashed was quickly replaced by three more. Every map I tore apart was reproduced from memory by congregation members who had apparently memorized every detail. The network they had built was too extensive and too redundant to be disrupted by any action I could take alone. Worse still, my efforts to interfere with their activities only seemed to energize them further, as if my resistance was itself part of some greater plan they were following. The reliquary had begun to change, its obsidian surface developing hairline cracks that leaked a substance I couldn't identify. The liquid wasn't quite blood, but it carried the metallic scent of spilled life and left stains that wouldn't wash away no matter how hard I scrubbed. The cracks spread slowly but steadily, following patterns that matched the symbols the congregation carved into their flesh. I could feel the artifact's influence growing stronger as its containment weakened, its whispers becoming more insistent and harder to ignore. The breaking point came when I realized the reliquary was no longer just influencing the congregation, it was changing me as well. My reflection in the few intact mirrors scattered throughout the underhive showed subtle alterations that filled me with creeping dread. My eyes had developed the same hollow quality as the marked ones, though they retained enough of their original appearance to avoid immediate recognition. My skin had taken on a pallor that made me look perpetually ill, and thin lines had begun to appear across my face and hands in patterns that echoed the congregation's carved symbols. More disturbing were the changes I couldn't see but could feel happening inside my body. My heartbeat had developed an irregular rhythm that seemed to sync with the reliquary's whispers. My breathing had become shallow and labored, as if something was slowly constricting my lungs. Food had lost all taste, becoming nothing more than ash in my mouth, while sleep brought only the same burning cathedral dreams that had plagued me since I first touched the cursed artifact. I began to understand that the reliquary wasn't just a container for some ancient evil. It was a trap designed to create exactly the situation I now found myself in. The artifact had been waiting in that sealed prayer hall for someone desperate enough to steal it, someone whose resentment and anger could serve as fuel for the corruption it contained. I had been the perfect candidate, a bitter thief with no loyalty to imperial authority and no faith in the Emperor's protection. The congregation seemed to sense my growing desperation, their rituals becoming more frequent and elaborate as my condition deteriorated. They gathered in larger numbers now, sometimes filling entire abandoned hab blocks with their synchronized movements and chanted repetitions of my words. The sound of hundreds of voices speaking in perfect unison carried through the maintenance tunnels, creating an omnipresent background noise that made it impossible to find true silence anywhere in the underhive. Their devotion had evolved beyond simple worship into something approaching religious ecstasy. They competed to demonstrate their dedication through increasingly extreme acts of self-mutilation, carving deeper symbols into their flesh and performing rituals that left them scarred and bleeding. Some had begun removing pieces of themselves, fingers, toes, even eyes, as offerings to be placed on the crude altars they had built in my honor. The sight of their willing self-destruction should have horrified me, but instead I felt a dark pride in the power I wielded over their lives. That pride terrified me more than anything else the reliquary had done. The corruption wasn't just changing my body, it was reshaping my thoughts and emotions, making me complicit in the atrocities being committed in my name. I could feel my personality being slowly eroded, replaced by something that found satisfaction in the congregation's suffering and took pleasure in their absolute devotion. The person I had been was disappearing, consumed by whatever entity the reliquary contained. I made one final desperate attempt to end the nightmare I had unleashed. The hab block where I had been hiding was part of a cluster of residential structures built during the hive's early expansion, their foundations connected to support pillars that helped bear the weight of the levels above. If I could damage enough of these pillars using stolen explosives, the resulting collapse might bury me along with anyone foolish enough to follow me into the rubble. The plan required more demolition charges than I could steal through normal means, but the congregation's growing influence had given me access to resources I never could have obtained alone. The marked ones had infiltrated maintenance crews, security details, even some of the gangs that controlled the Underhive's black markets. They brought me everything I requested without question, treating my desperate scheme as another sacred mission to be completed with absolute devotion. I spent 3 days placing the charges at strategic points throughout the hab block support structure, following diagrams I had stolen from the Hive's architectural archives. The work was dangerous and exhausting, requiring me to crawl through spaces barely wide enough for a human body while carrying enough explosives to level a city block. The reliquary's weight seemed to increase with each passing hour, its whispers becoming so loud that I could barely think over the constant noise. The congregation watched my preparations with their characteristic hollow stare, never interfering but always present. They seemed to understand what I was planning, but rather than trying to stop me, they began gathering in larger numbers around the hab block. By the time I was ready to trigger the explosives, hundreds of them had assembled in the surrounding areas, their synchronized movements creating patterns that stretched across multiple levels of the underhive. I activated the detonator from what I thought was a safe distance, expecting the charges to bring down the HAB block in a cascade of falling debris that would crush everything beneath. The explosions were everything I had hoped for, a series of thunderous blasts that shook the entire section of the hive and sent clouds of dust billowing through the maintenance tunnels. The sound of collapsing structures followed immediately, a grinding roar that seemed to go on forever as thousands of tons of debris crashed down into the spaces below. But when the dust settled and the echoes faded, I was still alive. The reliquary had somehow protected me from the collapse, creating a pocket of space around my body that remained intact even as everything else was crushed or buried. The obsidian skull had cracked completely open during the explosion, releasing whatever entity it had contained directly into my flesh. I could feel the thing moving beneath my skin, spreading through my nervous system like liquid fire. The congregation had survived as well, their bodies scattered throughout the rubble, but somehow still functional despite injuries that should have been instantly fatal. They began digging themselves out of the debris with methodical determination, their movements still perfectly synchronized, even though many of them were missing limbs or had suffered massive trauma. Blood flowed freely from their wounds, but they showed no signs of pain or distress as they worked to clear away the fallen stones and twisted metal. As they freed themselves from the rubble, they began arranging the debris around my trapped form with ritualistic precision. The broken stones and bent support beams were positioned to create a crude but unmistakable shrine, with my body at its center like a living relic. They worked in shifts, some clearing away debris while others brought offerings of food, stolen goods, and pieces of their own flesh to place around the improvised altar. I tried to move, to escape from the shrine they were building around me, but discovered that my body was no longer entirely under my control. The entity from the reliquary had fused with my nervous system, creating a connection that allowed it to influence my movements and thoughts. I could still think and feel, but my actions were increasingly guided by the alien intelligence that now shared my flesh. It wanted me to remain in place, to serve as the focal point for the corruption that was spreading through the underhive. Days passed, then weeks, as the congregation continued their work around my trapped form. The shrine grew more elaborate with each passing cycle, decorated with symbols carved into the surrounding debris and lit by candles made from rendered human fat. The marked ones took turns maintaining vigil around the altar, their hollow eyes fixed on my face as they recited the words I had spoken throughout my life as a thief and scavenger. More disturbing was the realization that I was no longer aging or requiring food and water to survive. The entity within me had transformed my body into something beyond normal human biology, sustained by the worship of the growing congregation rather than any physical needs. I could feel every prayer they offered, every ritual they performed, every act of devotion carried out in my name. The sensations were simultaneously ecstatic and horrifying, filling me with a power I had never imagined while trapping me in an existence I couldn't escape. The congregation continued to grow, drawing new converts from across the hive's population. They came in small groups at first, desperate workers seeking meaning in their suffering, criminals looking for protection from imperial justice, even some citizens from the upper levels who had grown disillusioned with the Emperor's promises. Each new convert added to the psychic weight pressing down on my consciousness, their devotion binding me more tightly to my role as their unwilling prophet. The rituals became more elaborate as the congregation's numbers swelled into the thousands. They built additional shrines throughout the underhive, each one connected to the original altar through underground passages that allowed them to move unseen by imperial authorities. The network they created was vast and complex, with cells operating independently while maintaining their connection to the central shrine where I remained trapped. Years passed, though time had lost most of its meaning for me. Hive Above continued its normal functions, its citizens unaware of the corruption spreading through the levels beneath their feet. Occasionally, imperial forces would investigate reports of heretical activity, but the congregation had learned from their encounter with Kine. They avoided direct confrontation, instead using their influence to misdirect investigations and eliminate threats through subtler means. I watched it all from my position at the shrine's center, conscious and aware, but unable to intervene. The entity within me fed on the congregation's worship, growing stronger with each passing day, while my own personality continued to fade. I could feel myself becoming less human and more something else, a living conduit for corruption that existed to serve the dark powers that had orchestrated my downfall. The worst part was understanding that this had always been the intended outcome. My theft of the reliquary, my desperate attempts to escape the consequences, even my final plan to destroy everything, all of it had been anticipated and guided by forces far beyond my comprehension. I had thought I was making choices, but I had actually been following a path laid out for me from the moment I first set foot in that ancient prayer hall. The congregation showed no signs of diminishing devotion despite the decades that had passed. If anything, their faith had grown stronger as my transformation became more complete. They brought new converts to witness my suffering, using my trapped and corrupted form as proof of their twisted theology's truth. Each new believer added to the weight of worship that sustained my unnatural existence while binding me more tightly to my role as their living shrine. I tried to scream, to rage against the fate that had consumed me, but even that small rebellion was beyond my power now. The entity within me had grown too strong, its influence too pervasive to resist. I could only watch and experience as the corruption I had unleashed continued to spread through the Underhive, claiming new victims who would suffer as I suffered, trapped forever in an existence that mocked everything they had once been. The cycles of worship continued endlessly around my broken form, each ritual adding another layer to the spiritual prison that held me. I remained conscious through it all, forced to witness every atrocity committed in my name while being unable to prevent or protest any of it. This was my punishment for the theft that had seemed so promising, my eternal reward for a lifetime of taking what didn't belong to me. In the darkness of the Underhive, surrounded by the devoted and the damned, I finally understood the true price of my crimes. Death would have been a mercy, but mercy was not part of the design that had ensnared me. I would remain here forever, a living testament to the corruption that could bloom in the galaxy's forgotten places, sustained by worship I had never wanted and trapped in a role I could never escape. The congregation's chanting rose around me once again, their voices blending into the familiar litany of my own words transformed into prayers of damnation. I closed my eyes and tried to remember what it had felt like to be human, but even that small comfort was slipping away, consumed by the endless cycle of worship that would continue until the Hive itself crumbled into dust.